This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Andrea Lee Winna. Andrea is a brilliant partner in digital health and healthcare at McGuire Woods. We're going to talk to her today about herself, her career, about the role of digital health and how it's changing and what she sees as top priorities for health systems, and then a little bit of her thoughts and advice for emerging leaders. Andrea, can you take a moment, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about you and your career?
Sure. So, like you mentioned, I'm McGuire Woods, Chicago office, healthcare attorney there, and I co-lead our digital health innovation and technology group. And I've worked in healthcare law really my entire career, and I was inspired to go to law school from experience I had from my grandmother, actually. She was in a nursing home for 11 years, had Alzheimer's disease, and remember going there and visiting her, and it had such an impact on me through what healthcare companies do, what nursing homes and hospitals and healthcare systems and really everyone across the spectrum. And through that experience, I knew, hey, I want to go to law school. I want to help these companies innovate and provide products and services to individuals to improve healthcare and improve people's lives. And so that's really how I got into the healthcare space. And as I started to practice, I realized, you know, if I'm thinking about what does healthcare look like 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, you can't ignore digital health, innovation, technology. And that's really what got me into this space and how I've been focusing on digital health.
Thank you very, very much. And talk about what are the trends you're watching in digital health? How is that evolving? How quickly is it moving? And what do systems have to do about digital health?
Yeah, one thing that came to mind this week actually was price transparency. And I know that with hospital systems, there's been somewhat of a controversial new law around requiring hospital systems to publish their pricing, right? To make it more of a shoppable service, to have information available on their website so individuals can go on there and they can know how much you know, their service is going to be. If you show up to the hospital, you show up to the ER, how much is it really going to cost you? There's been some pushback on that, some changes in enforcement on that. But I went to the dermatologist actually the other day, and it was interesting because I was waiting in line. There was a couple of people in front of me, and both of them did not know why their bill was so much, right? Both of them were complaining. And they didn't know what insurance cost and et cetera, and why some procedure costs what it costs. And it got me thinking about digital health. And I think an advantage digital health has over traditional healthcare organizations right now is they do truly provide price transparency. For example, if you go to a dermatologist and you want to go to a digital health company that will look at an atypical mole, let's say, you would know going into that experience how much is going to be charged, or the new Walmart clinics of the world. You know, I looked up this morning, and if you want to have a primary care visit, it says right on their website, $40, right? So there's incredible price transparency with some of these alternative care providers. And, you know, it's just interesting because I think that's an area that health systems should think about how to compete in that area, how to compete around price transparency and that movement in that space. And, you know, how do these retail clinics, how do digital health companies that are really used to providing this direct-to-consumer experience, and they know how to, and that's what they do, right? The Walmarts and the Amazons, they price range directly. And so how do you compete with that, and what's that going to look like in the future is more people want to know how much is my healthcare going to cost if I show up or I have this service.
But isn't that what you said leads to so many different discussions? And I think it's just brilliant and right on. Thank you. It's when you see like Walmart advertises, $40 for a half hour, an hour for a mental health visit, and you think about, oh my goodness, I pay the therapist this, or somebody pays the therapist that. You know, not me, but somebody else. But yes. But the point being that it's like you look at this, and they got the direct transparency, and you look at all those kinds of things like MRI pricing. Kill of hospitals on an MRI, and an independent MRI provider advertises for X dollars, and somebody has to get an MRI and then take that MRI to the hospital. But in today's world, it's easier and easier to do that. And you look at these companies like Amazon, Walmart, that are so good on the consumer experience side and so good at those things, and then hospitals and health systems that are really so good at the patient care thing that they're actually so much greater depth. When I go into some of these places today, not to name names, you know, but I see the XYZ place for Keir, you know, it's supposed to be a great place for Keir, but they literally have nobody there still. They're still so lack of depth in the actual clinical resources. And I go to the hospital, urgent care in a local area, and you're treated like you're an extension of the hospital, just magnificent, like great care. And how do you marry? And I marry this consumerism that Amazon and Walmart are so good at, and the CVSs and the Walgreens being retail consumer oriented, with the health systems that still have so much better depth. I mean, I saw that Walgreens is spending $5 billion for VillageMD because they know they got to plug that hole. They actually got to bring patient clinical depth to what they're trying to do. But it's really a fascinating observation from you on the transparency of pricing and how the consumer-oriented places are so good. And I guess the only comment I would have is that some of them seem so slim still in actual healthcare resources. Mm-hmm. And I think, thank God for health systems, that that's the case, because they've got to catch up on the consumer side. But just fascinating. Thank you. Andrew, let me ask you a different question. Change gears for a second. You've been a leader. You've got this amazing gift for leadership and people, and to go with great technical ability. What advice do you give to emerging leaders? What are three pieces of advice you'd give to an emerging leader?
Well, I think one of them that I've been, so for Women's History Month, I was asked to do, you know, a series of questions thinking about, you know, women leaders. And one thing that came to mind when I was thinking through that is how important it is to make sure that after nearly every phone call we have with, let's say, a client and one of your junior partners, or, you know, someone junior to you, or every work product that you have, it's so easy just to drop off the phone call and say, okay, on to the next thing, because our to-do lists are so incredibly long and there's so much work to do. Most of the time it's just trying to stay on all, top of that. One thing I'm trying to do, and I'm not perfect at it, but I'm trying to work at it, is to pick up the phone then and call that junior individual and say, here's why I did what I did. Here's why I mentioned this to the client. Here's how I thought that went. Here's how I thought it could go better. Here's something that, you know, you should take away from this. And just even doing that for 5 minutes and fitting that in, I think can make an incredible difference in our organizations, because, you know, I think we've all been in a position where you've got this big project and it's like, oh my gosh, is someone trained up on this? Like, who can help me on this? And you realize, oh man, am I in a pinch here? And that prevents that from happening, right? And it really makes a structural change in the organization to say, I'm helping those individuals move up. I'm helping my organization be able to do more. And I'm helping myself, right? I've got this wonderful team. So that's something
I think that is just brilliant. And let's talk about that for a moment. I would call it this bias to being willing to explain why doing what we're doing, or why we did what we did. And I think sometimes if people don't do it, it's because they're too impatient. It could be received on the other end from the person you're working with, whether client, associate, anyone, as arrogance, or you don't care, or they're just getting half the story. And so if you spend just a few minutes explaining, here's why we did it this way, you know, here's why we keep podcasts short, because more people listen then, or whatever it is, the reason is. It's not that I'm trying, not that I don't care about hearing you talk for 30 minutes, because quite frankly, nothing would be more fun for me. but the reality is, it's like, if we keep them 10, 15 minutes, more people listen to them. But be willing to explain why we do it. Why do I not send questions all the time in advance? Because I'm too tired sometimes. You know, I mean, actually, not because I'm like arrogant, but I'm just too tired and exhausted. But be willing to explain why things happen, why they happen. It's not because you don't think the person's deserving of it. It's because you just failed to do it. Andrew. It's like therapy for me. Thank you. Tell me more. I love this concept of, because there's so many business books written about this concept of being willing to actually explain why you said or did something. And it just takes a few extra minutes, but it goes so far in leadership and development of people and development of oneself. What other, you know, give us another thought or piece of advice for emerging leader. I think that one is just spot on and so important. Thank you.
Yeah, I think another one at the Healthcare Private Equity Conference, we had a women's breakfast, and the speaker there was amazing. And she talked about this acronym CRISP, which she called it, which was C for composition, R for reflection, I for interpretation, S for structural, and P for psychological. And it's similar to what I was just talking about, you know, looking at the composition of your teams. Do you have different backgrounds? You know, reflecting on that team. Why are you interpreting things a certain way? Do you have a bias that you're interpreting something incorrectly? You're not asking enough questions. Again, that structural piece. What's the structural change that needs to be made to your organization, to your team? And if you ever, you know, not only, again, you're benefiting your organization, if you were to move on to something else, you have this permanent impact on the organization, permanent impact on individuals. And then psychological, how do you interact with others? How can you make it so others feel comfortable to ask for help? Sharing suggestions, challenging the status quo. So I thought that was great advice, and it really stuck with me, and it's easy to remember with Chris thinking through it that way. And just again, around Women's History Month, thinking, okay, how can I make some structural changes? How can I make sure I have those diverse teams? And thinking about that every time you put a team together.
Thank you. And could you go through the acronym CRISP again, just for any listeners that are taking notes and want to follow that? What is exactly CRISP stands for?
Yeah. So CRISP is C for composition. So that's people in the room representing those different backgrounds. R, reflection. Think about, you know, what bias do you have? How, how are you looking at the setting, and, you know, could that be changed? Reflect on how you're experiencing that. I for interpretation. Are you interpreting different perspectives correctly? Increase your communication with individuals. F, structural, advocate for necessary structural change. And P is for psychological, which is, you know, how do you impact those interactions with individuals on your team? How can they feel comfortable asking for help, sharing suggestions?
Thank you very, very much. Andrea Leland, I want to thank you again for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Love getting a chance to visit with you and hear your wisdom. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.